Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hello, friends. It's me, Duncan, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. And as many of you know, I've been diving into the strange worlds of virtual reality, a technology I have fallen in love with, not just because of the incredible wild spectrum of experience that it offers, from standing on the wrecked hull of an underwater ship watching a massive whale swim by to experiencing a relatively karma-free three-way, but because of the philosophical implications of the technology, when you put virtual reality goggles on and look at your hand or look down at your body and your hand and your body isn't there, it forces you to ask what is considered by many to be one of the most important questions that a human being can ask, which is, who am I if I'm not my body? Who am I if when I look down, there's nothing there? The experience that virtual reality can offer is weirdly similar to one of my favorite stories that Ram Dass, formerly known as Richard Alpert, tells. And I found a clip of him telling this story. I hope it's okay for me to play it here. This is Ram Dass talking about the time that he took synthetic psilocybin at Timothy Leary's house.
And when I got back in the spring, one night, on the night of a large snowstorm, I was invited over to Timothy's house. I was visiting my parents in this suburb near Timothy, about a few blocks away. And I walked a few blocks to ingest psilocybin, the synthetic of the Mexican mushrooms. And then I went off into the living room by myself. And this is the report of that few moments at that point. But now, a few hours later, I had gone off by myself to reflect upon these new feelings and senses. A deep calm pervaded my being. The rug crawled and the pictures smiled, all of which delighted me. Then I saw a figure standing about 8 feet away where a moment before there had been no one. I peered into the semi-darkness and recognized none other than myself, in cap and gown and hood as a professor. It was as if that part of me, which was Harvard professor, had separated or dissociated itself from me. Well, I thought, I worked hard to get that status, but I don't really need it. So it's over there and I'm over here, so I'll give it up. I won't get frightened. Okay. Again, I settled back into the cushions, but at that moment, the figure changed. Again, I looked, leaned forward, straining to see. Ah, me again. But now it was that aspect of me which was the social cosmopolite. Okay. So that goes too, I thought. Again and again, the figure changed, and I recognized over there all the different aspects I knew to be me. Cellist, pilot, etc. With each new presentation, I again and again reassured myself that I didn't need that anyway. Then I saw the figure over there become that in me which was Richard Alpertness. That is, the basic social identity by which I had always acknowledged my existence. Sweat broke out on my forehead. I wasn't at all sure I could do without being Richard Alpert. Did that mean I'd have amnesia? Was that what this drug that this madman had given me was going to do? Would it be permanent? Should I call Tim? What the hell? I'll give up being Richard Alpert. I can always get a new social identity. At least I have my body. But I spoke too soon. As I looked down at my body for reassurance, I could see nothing below the kneecaps. And slowly, now to my horror, with my eyes wide open, I saw the progressive disappearance of limbs and then torso, until all there was the couch on which I had sat. This is usually known as a bad trip report. A scream formed in my throat. I felt that I was dying, since there was nothing in my universe that led me to believe in life after leaving the body. Doing without professorness, or loverness, or even Richard Alpertness was okay, but I certainly needed the body. Panic mounted, adrenaline shot through my system, my mouth became dry, but along with this, a voice sounded inside, what I don't know, but inside. An intimate voice asked very quietly and rather jocularly, it seemed to me, considering how distraught I was, "But who's minding the store?" When I could finally focus on the question, which takes a while, I realized that though everything by which I knew myself, even my body and thus life itself as I knew it was gone, still I was fully aware. Not only that, but this aware I was watching the entire drama, including the panic, with calm compassion. Instantly, with this recognition, I felt a new kind of calmness, one of a profundity never experienced before. I had just found that I, later I called it a scanning device, a point, an essence, place where I existed independent of social and physical identity. That which was I was beyond life and death. And something else, that I knew. It really knew. It was wise rather than just knowledgeable. It was the voice inside that spoke truth. I recognized it, was one with it, and felt as if my entire life of looking to the outside world for reassurance was over. Now I need only look within to that place where I knew. Fear turned into exaltation. I ran out into the snow laughing. In a moment, the house was lost from view, but it was all right because inside I knew. At about 5:30, I walked through the silent land, the few blocks, my heart full to overflowing with the joy of my newfound self. At my parents' home, I felt the urge to clear the walk, as any good young tribal buck might. Happily, I set about the task. Then the upstairs window flew open, and there were my parents. "Come to bed, you idiot." Nobody shovels snow in the middle of the night. Ah, there was that external voice to which I had always listened. But what did the voice inside say? It said, "It's okay to shovel snow, and it's okay to be happy." I laughed up at them, danced a bit of a jig, and returned to shoveling. When I looked again, they had closed the window, and behind it, they too were smiling. It's known as a contact high.
That's one of the things I really love about virtual reality, is that it reproduces one of the classic psychedelic experiences, which is the annihilation of the self that can come from a really high dose of psilocybin or LSD. Only this is now available to people without having to take any of these drugs at all. So that's one of the really cool things about virtual reality. And of course, the fact that virtual reality seems to be a piece of an emerging time machine that's going to allow people from the future to experience digital replications of the past. That's pretty cool too. So if you have access to it, friends, I highly recommend diving into virtual reality and take a moment when you're in there to look down at your body and ask yourself, who am I? Where am I? If I don't have a body, what do I then become? It's one of the most important philosophical questions. And if you want to look more into that question, check out the fantastic book aptly named Who Am I by Ramana Maharishi. And if you liked that Ram Dass story, then definitely go to ramdass.org or check out his amazing audiobook, Experiments in Truth, or his incredible book known as The Hippie Bible, Be Here Now. All right, sweeties, we got a great podcast for you. We're going to dive right into it. But first, some very quick business.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Today's guest is the host of one of the greatest podcasts on planet Earth. He's also the host of the UFC, and he's one of my best friends on planet Earth. Everybody, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, the great Joe Rogan. Here we are in the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast with the great Joe Rogan. Voila! Look at him.
Hi.
And here's what sucks. My wide cam is shit. Looks like a shitty security camera.
It's fun, though. I like that it's shit. Because one day when you have some giant fucking recording studio somewhere
right.
with mechanical arms and it's all driven by an app on your phone, you'll look back in these days of wood tables and and fan-made art.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, all the cool shit.
Yeah, this looks like the footage that you see a cop shooting a black person on.
Oh, dude, I need one of those stickers. I need one of these Duncan Trussell Family Hour stickers for my computer.
I will get one for you, man.
I love that. So, that is so fucking Illuminati, bro. You're not even hiding it anymore.
Oh, dude, that's not a DTFH. That is Alex and Allison Gray, my mother and my... that's my spiritual mother and father symbol, man.
I love them.
That's Cosm. I love them too, man. They are because I often think about them, man. Like, I think about them probably more than they would feel comfortable about how much I think about those guys, because they are, like, so inspirational, and their ideas about art are so beautiful because they are all-inclusive, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, some people are so elitist when it comes to art or painting, and they tell you, no, this is, like, only something people with talent can do. But Alex and Allison, they look at it as, like, a kind of religion almost, like a form of self-expression, connecting with the divine, the transcendent.
I mean, it's a beautiful way to look at it. And thinking of it as a religion, like, there's a lot of negative baggage that's associated with that.
With the word.
Yeah, and even the word God. Alex loves to use the word God. He uses it all the time. He's like, we need to take it back. We need to take that word back. It doesn't have to mean some rigid ideological principles that were supposedly written down on animal skins thousands of years ago, and we must enforce them to the letter of the law today.
Right.
He's like, God doesn't have to be that. He goes, God can be love. God can be unconditional love between human beings when it breaks the boundaries of your insecurities and of your stress or your situation or whatever the fuck it is that's holding you back from fully expressing yourself. Like, what is that feeling? Like, when you have someone that you really care about in your life and you're both on ecstasy.
Yes.
Come on. I mean, that has got to be, if that's not in love, that's got to be like in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's not rather God, that's got to be in the neighborhood.
Right.
I mean, how much more holy can something get than like the ultimate joyful experience with no repercussions? Like, right. That's what we're all looking for, right? We're all looking for these ultimate joyful moments that almost never fully materialize.
That's right. Well, yeah, and I, you know, I think the word God is a term of convenience.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just easier to say it than it is to say all the other things that you mean. Like, oh, I'm talking about a higher version of myself. I'm talking about some aspect of me that I aspire to be. I'm talking about the potentiality of all things. It's easier just to say God. It's just a quick way to describe everything.
Hearing you say it like that, I want to start using it. I want to start saying God all the time. Well, praise God. Thanks to God for us being here.
Yes.
Look, man, it ain't a bad way to think. That's for damn sure. It's not a bad way to think.
Well, like, it's like, take the term infinity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if you actually tried to say what infinity means. Like, what are you going to say? Every type of chicken and rooster and planet? And you say infinity because it represents the sum total of all things.
You mind fucked me into oblivion the other day when you're talking about taking the God and taking the Bible, taking out the word God and putting in the words the programmer.
Oh yeah, let me read it to you real quick. I got it right here, as a matter of fact. I'm ready to bring it up.
You scared the shit out of me the other day.
By now everyone's sick of this because I've read it on the podcast a few times, but I must read it again. I haven't uploaded it yet, and I have had requests for people. For those of you listening,
whose idea was this to do this?
I think that I want to say it's my idea, but I feel like I may have seen it somewhere else in a sci-fi book or something.
Right.
So I'm not really sure.
It seemed, when you brought it up, it seemed vaguely familiar.
Yeah,
I
feel like this is some, to me too, I think so. I'm not claiming this is my idea. I just did it for fun because I was thinking about simulation.
No, but it doesn't, whoever's idea it is, it's awesome. It's so weird when you do that.
Well, that's,
when, you just, I'm sorry, just take away a name and change a name, and then the story becomes insane.
Well, yeah, well, it's because religion was using terminology that was the highest technology they had. Kings and lords and angels, those were just high-tech words for them. So if we replace those words with our version of high-tech, then suddenly it starts making a little bit more sense. So this is the book of
high-tech?
Well, yeah, I think for we look at kings as archaic.
Right.
If you're talking about people like, now I think Terrence McKenna would say the idea of a king is a terrible patriarchal male dominator culture exit from Eden. But another way to look at it might be, here's an organizing principle to transform society into something that's organized and is a temporary bridge. We needed kings to get to where we are now. Who knows if we did or not.
Did we? I don't know. It seems like maybe. You know, I always look at all aspects of it, and people get annoyed at me for doing this, but I try to, at least at one point in time, whether I'm married to it or not, I like to look at all aspects of human behavior as being natural. Just like I would look at like weird things that wolves do, where they force the older wolves out on their own. Like this weird, creepy shit that wolves can do, like to kick the old alpha out.
Right.
They'll have that poor bastard wandering through the woods on his own trying to get by. Like if he can't hold his own anymore, like that happens in certain animal packs. They have, you know, animals have weird behavior characteristics, like lions. Lions, when they get to a certain age, the young males will challenge the older male, and oftentimes like two or three of them will gang up and kill him.
Yeah.
It's crazy to watch. I don't know if you've ever watched those videos where the young males gang up on an old dominant male.
I haven't seen that.
It's dark, dude. It's dark. But it happens every time. This is the only way they do it.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what they do.
Yeah.
They fight for dominance, and one of them usually either leaves or dies in the struggle. And I always wanted to look at people the same way I look at all the rest of the things that are playing out. But we don't want to look at people that way because we want to elevate ourselves from all of the natural processes we see all around us, everything. We want to isolate ourselves because of reason and communication and the gathering of knowledge, right? So because we can reason, because we can communicate, because we can gather knowledge, we always want to think that our actions and our purpose here is very well thought out. And we're going to meet, and Bob and Dolores have drafted up a new plan for the community, and we're all going to find.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, there seems to be some universal natural processes that are going on. And some of them are fucking horrific.
Right.
They're horrific, like war, right?
Yeah.
Universal sort of basic process that happens throughout every civilization. It's like almost unchecked. It's almost no civilizations, unless they are completely resource poor, have managed to not be involved in some sort of a massive conflict. And you're seeing that now with, like, indigenous people that live in the Amazon, right?
Right.
For the longest time, they were in the woods by themselves. There was nothing. No one getting to them. Nothing was going on, man. There was no conflict.
Yeah.
Very little conflict, at least, except interpersonal, normal bullshit, I'm sure, right? All of a sudden, loggers start coming in, and they want to fight off the loggers, and people wind up getting murdered.
Right.
And now, all of a sudden, they have a conflict. Now they have a war because new people have moved into the area. So it's every single time people are in any way vulnerable, someone comes to take advantage of that. It's just what people do. It's a weird, almost universal rule that people find a way to do it. So then the question becomes, is it possible that we can alter that? Is it possible that we can alter that with the communication that we have today, with all the knowledge that we've gathered up? Maybe our ideas of things being natural or unnatural are archaic. Maybe we're going to be able to reason through that. Well, I think that the computer's natural. I think the computer is like bee pollen.
Yeah.
I think it's like honey. I think it's something that the animal makes.
Well, it's a I think the computer is a the internet is the mycelium. The internet is the mycelium, and the computer is the technology, is the fungal growth that's growing off of this network. So when you see a computer, a PC, you're actually looking at a little fungal extrusion from the network that we currently call the internet. And it's the more of these things that grow out of time, then the more advanced it becomes, because the things seem to be working together to make each of them better.
Yeah.
Dude, I have gotten so sucked in because of VR. I've gotten so sucked into this virtual reality and building gaming PCs that I go to sleep now watching people build gaming PCs, because is fucking nuts to see these badass machines that have like liquid cooling tubes running through them that the designers have made look like blood, and LED lights that are kind of pulsing because it is kind of alive. And you just went into VR.
Right.
We can talk about that in a second, but you've seen now the potency of technology, and that it is now actually opening up many alternate dimensions for us to experience. So what we're looking at, to me, it's like, yes, right now we have war. War is an inevitability historically. It seems like a thing that can never go away. But upon experiencing virtual reality, I have realigned myself with Kurzweil's ideas that there is a probability that we actually might move into a brand new era of humanity where all the things that we used to think were just part of being a human being transform, including old age, death, and being trapped in whatever our genetic structure is. That's like an old thing. You're your body. You're stuck in your body. You're always going to be your body. This is a thing that people have gotten completely used to. It makes a lot of sense. But now we've got Jenner turning into a woman. We have people transforming into the alternate gender using technology. It's all using technology, medical technology.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going to see people doing that more and more and more until finally we no longer are anchored to any of the predetermined biological components that we used to think were who we were, including our surroundings.
Yeah. It also might be possible that this is happening and it's going to coincide with medical sciences advancements.
Yes.
And the synergistic effect of having these new technologies that they're incorporating, and then medical technologies that they're building off of a lot of these inventions and innovations that come up, they're so close to having little nanobots that swim around in your body and fix shit that's bad.
Yep, that's right. And there are people who will tell you, no, it's never going to work. They're never going to reverse the aging process. They're
so close. They're so close in so many ways. There was some new thing that I tweeted really recently. I need to send the article. I sent the article to Rhonda Patrick, but I need to try to read it and decipher it myself. But in leafing through it, essentially they found some new drug that actually is showing to reverse the aging process. It lengthens telomeres.
Yeah.
And they're like, this is the first thing that they've ever found that lengthens telomeres. And, you know, now they have to do these big studies on it and figure out, like, what is going on and what is – but it's essentially reversing the aging process. The aging process is a biological thing. And it seems to me that they have at least the possibility of figuring out some pretty incredible aspects of it. At least the possibility.
Dude, I mean, if you think about – like, if you look at pictures – from the 1950s.
Oh, yeah.
Of people your age, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were pretty fucked up. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you had no idea what, like, any kind, like, dietary standards.
Mm-hmm.
You thought cigarettes were good for you.
Yep.
There was no environmental regulations. People were fucking rubbing radium cream on their balls. You know about that, right? Like, people, like, radium used to get put into cosmetic products. The idea was that
who's rubbing cosmetics on their balls?
I would.
That's the government trying to kill stupid people. That's what it is. It's
not,
like,
not a bad theory.
Cream for your balls. Guys are like, I'm in. When do your balls need cream?
Radioactive cream for your balls. This was a thing where people used to use radium as a form of, like, they thought it was healthy. This is a radioactive substance that people used to use cosmetically. They thought it was, like, a good thing. Like, look at, you know, what's her name? Marie Curie, the woman who studied radiation.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to look at her lab books, you have to put on a hazmat suit because her lab books are radioactive because she was always around radiation. So there was a long, long period in modern civilization where people didn't know how bad shit was for you. And I'm sure there's some aspect of that right now.
I need to write something down or I'm definitely going to forget
it.
Because it's something that I did last night and it's new shit. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
You need a notepad here, buddy.
I need to get a notepad. I need a lot of shit. I need a camera that doesn't look like a fucking security camera. I don't know why.
No, it's good.
Decided to.
It's good.
Like, fuck up on
once
me.
Once you have some giant ass studio, people will look back in these days and they'll think it's awesome.
I don't even know if the stream is still working. Let's see. Yep. Oh. Stream's still working. Amazing. Last time we tried to do it, it totally fell out. Now, let me just read this really quickly. This is what we were talking about earlier. So this is like I did just a find and replace. In the book of John, which is my favorite gospel in the Bible, it's the most psychedelic one. Just trying to see what happens if I plug in simulation theory into the Bible to see how it sounds. I'll just read it to you. In the beginning was the code, and the code was with the programmer, and the code was the programmer. He was with the programmer in the beginning. Through him, all things were programmed. Without him, nothing was programmed that has been programmed. In him was life, and that life was the upgrade of all mankind. The upgrade shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not downloaded it. The true upgrade that upgrades everyone was coming into the simulation. He was in the simulation, and though the simulation was programmed through him, the simulation did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of the programmer. It's so funny because you're looking at, like, basically the idea is when you do the translation, if this is a simulation, then the programmer recognized that the AI inside the simulation had reached a level of sentience that it was actually experiencing suffering. The programmer, feeling this incredible rush of empathy and compassion, went into the simulation as an avatar to try to create an upgrade using his own body as the means to do it. He had he allowed his own simulation to destroy him as a sign of love for the thing which he had programmed.
Jesus Christ.
That's what they called him. Yeah. But that's the idea. But that was the idea. It's like Grand Theft Auto 19 that comes out in like 2043. It's like you're playing Grand Theft Auto and you realize, my God, man, when I run over these fucking people in the street for fun, they're really suffering. The AI is too advanced. So I'm actually going to go into the Grand Theft Auto and I'm going to attempt to
show them that I love them and that it's better for them not to kill each other anymore. And the way I'm going to do it is by letting them kill me, and I'm going to experience that death for real is an indication that I'm one of them. That's the, like...
Sounds like a good plot for a video game.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, yeah, that is a great idea.
It's a great plot for a video game.
I've always thought somebody needs to make the Jesus story into the most hilarious video game.
Not hilarious, bro. Serious. Come on, bro.
No way. Being able to wander around some fucking simulation and heal sick people and walk on water. And
you look over your arms, you're carrying a cross. How many people would sign up? Everyone?
Everyone. Everyone.
Mel Gibson should get on that. He made a bundle off the Passion of the Christ.
So funny.
If he had the Passion of the Christ VR and you could get your ass kicked as Jesus.
Dude, I've been telling people to make a crucifixion simulator since the DK1.
Mel on it.
No one pays attention. No one does it. They don't realize how incredible it would be to allow yourself to be crucified.
I think this is one of those rare times where people are doing something and they're way ahead of the curve where people think the actual technology is. And it's a consumer technology. I think there's almost something scary about VR. It's not just that it's cumbersome, that you have to put on gear and I had to put on a goggle and then headset over that and you got to hold these things. It's not that. There's something that people are uncomfortable with.
Yeah.
Like internally, like they're introducing their wife to the new man that's going to fuck her.
Wow, crazy. That's crazy.
There's something about VR that I think people secretly know. Like, if it is as good as Oculus and HTC, if it's as good as this now, and no one even knows about it, what is it going to be like in 50 years?
Indistinguishable from reality.
100%. Yeah. And 100%, they will figure out a way to put some heptactic suit. Haptic suit. And even better than that, they're going to figure out how to just charge certain parts of your brain to experience certain things. Like they might be able to give you an artificial feeling of heat.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the thing about it is this. If you read a great book, your body will already produce the experience that the main characters experience. If you're watching a great movie and you get absorbed into the movie, your body already will produce the experience. When you're fully absorbed in a movie, your pulse will increase when shit gets exciting, right? Your body already like handles simulating, taking over for senses that aren't being stimulated at the time. When you put VR on, even with like the archery game that you were doing, just that little bit of haptic to like create the tension of the bowstring.
Yeah, there's a little something. There's a little feeling, a little vibration as you're pulling it back.
Yeah, and that's just the very beginning. There's another thing called the sub-pack, which stimulates like bass vibrations in your body. They're working on all these different fields, but really, like, we don't need the neural interface. It's already close to being there. Like, I only showed you a few of the apps, but when you're in there for a while, Your brain just accepts, like, all right, I am now in this dimension. Like, you stop fighting the fact that you're in this other place. You become fully immersed, fully absorbed. And so I don't think we're looking at a 20-year timeline, a 10-year timeline. I think we're looking at within a year to 2 years, the technology is going to be in everybody's home who can afford it. And the price of it's going to lower. PlayStation's coming out with VR. It's going to be everywhere, and then the market pressures are going to create these things that you're talking about, and then before long, we're not going to be doing podcasts in this place anymore. And I think people don't like it because people don't want other people to have the ability to instantaneously transform their reality. It is so subversive. It's so subversive. Like, right now, the way we display wealth. Like, I was listening to some YouTube video about, like, I can't remember the type of bird it is, but it takes bugs and pins them on thorns in its habitat and things that, like, food, berries, it just pins all these fucking things on thorns. So when the female comes flying in, you know, she sees, oh, shit, man, Look at all those fucking bugs he's pinned on those thorns. Damn, that is a successful fucking hunter. And she fucks him, right? So now, the modern day version of that is...
What kind of bird is that?
I'll try to find it. I'll find the YouTube video for you. It was actually a really interesting YouTube video. I started watching it because the guy who was giving the presentation runs fasting clinics. And he didn't look to me to be that healthy. He looked a little too thin, like he was starving himself. So actually, I started playing the YouTube video because I'm like, let's hear what this fucking asshole has to say. And then it's like, oh shit, he's pretty charismatic and hypnotic. He was talking about efficiency. He was talking about the efficiency of nature, how, you know, like fish swim in schools. By the way, I didn't fact check any of it. Could easily be some kind of Topanga Canyon cult leader. But what he was saying was really smart. Fish swim in schools. You know how like race car drivers can somehow get an updraft or something from other race cars?
Yeah.
Fish swim in schools because they can save energy by using the other current or the momentum of the other fish. Saves a little energy, makes them efficient. Birds, when they fly in flocks, they're like doing it's the exact same phenomena. Gives them a little bit more energy for, you know, taking long trips. There are other reasons fish do it. But then the mating instinct, he was just talking about that if you look at the trajectory of organic, of like animal life's, like where animal life triangulates its intention, it's towards maximum efficiency, towards mating, and I can't remember the third thing that he was talking about. But anyway, with VR, it's weirdly answering a lot of these problems because the efficiency of building a mansion to attract a mate, the efficiency of getting in like your physical body in great shape, the efficiency of like doing all the things that are associated with making you a desirable mate, these things are now going to be relegated to the archaic if VR gets to the point where we can pop on goggles, design our own super mansions, and hang out with other non-symmetrical people who have now donned the avatar of any being that they want to represent in this spectacular habitat that they've designed for themselves using their mind. It's maximum efficiency at the cost of the human body. And it does, sadly, aesthetically, in this meat body dimension, it could start looking a lot like the WALL-E realm. A lot of big, fat meat bodies existing in, like, very beautiful environments.
That could be really weird. Did your computer just shut off?
I don't think so.
That could be really weird. It could be really weird. And the only thing that would be lacking is physical touch. Right? But that's just a matter of time. Wouldn't it be weird if that was the one thing they never totally got? It always was like fucking with a condom on. He always just didn't quite feel like you were intimate with people. He didn't quite feel like you were actually in the, you know, Super Bowl as a football player. You didn't quite. It just something's missing.
Yeah. Man, it's going to be like people don't like VR. People don't like this new technology. It has a satanic feel to it because it is subversive and it subverts every single societal mechanism that we've grown accustomed to. And so people are weirded out by it, man.
Yeah.
I don't blame them. But I'll tell you, when I go into VR, I really do experience the one of the first things they teach you when you become a Hare Krishna, which is you are not your body. You're not your body. Your idea that your body is the only thing that represents you in this dimension is one of the great delusions. It's not just the Hare Krishnas. It's an Eastern idea. You're the Atman, the watcher, the observer, and the body is just one. In the same way that technology is the flower growing off the mycelium of the internet, the human body is the very same thing. It's a form of bioorganic technology growing out of an infinite field of consciousness. And your attachment to your body, your connection with your body, your idea that you are your body is no different than someone who popped on VR goggles for way too long and started thinking that that dimension they were in was reality. And that's why I think VR has a weirdly religious tinge to it.
Well, it's almost like what human civilization is and what people are in this moment in time is we're like a speeding car that sees a wall up ahead, and the car is like swerving sideways now.
Yeah.
You know, the car's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
This has all the potential to be the new reality that most people exist in.
Yeah.
It's, I don't think people understand that. And I don't think I totally understood it until I put the goggles on. Twice you've done this to me. The first time was with the original Oculus, which was the original version wasn't even a for consumer version. And so it was very pixelated, and it was sort of just they were just explaining the technology and showing you what potentially could be built upon. Right. That was kind of the idea behind it.
Yeah.
And then I got a phone call from you. I was at the Improv. And I stepped outside, I remember, because I remember where I was standing. I was standing right in front of the Improv on Melrose. And you're like, dude, it's a fucking game changer. It's a game changer. This is bigger than the internet. This is bigger. It's bigger than the typewriter. Yeah. It's bigger than the fucking wheel, man. And you had just gotten back from the
VR
one.
LA.
Yeah, the one where you go into the guy's room and he's playing the piano.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw that one on a phone.
Right.
Not like a good thing. Just like a setup on the phone. Yeah, they have some of them with the various Android phones you can do
that
with.
It's called the Gear.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Which was kind of cool.
It's
but,
okay.
But today.
Yeah.
Today. Dude, I had a boxing match with some dude, some Russian dude. I fucked some Russian dude up.
Can I put that video on Instagram?
Okay, yeah, you can put it up.
Yeah.
Well, it was hilarious.
Well, what's really cool, man, about watching you do that was because I've been fighting that fucking dude, and he's been kicking my ass. So it was really cool to watch it. The name of the VR game, for those of you who have the Vive, it's called Thrill of the Fight. It's still in an alpha. It's not finished yet. But as a side note, you start feeling this weird camaraderie with all the people who have the guts to be developing for VR right now because they're just pouring their life into it, and it's a risky endeavor. Not a lot of people have the goggles, and so you weirdly want to help them. So this game, Thrill of the Fight, it's a boxing game, and it's pretty fucking cool. But I've tried it a few times, and when Joe, because Joe's a fighter, he knows how to fight. So I was really curious, like, will there be a difference? Like, how much is this related to skill as opposed to, like, other video games like that aren't VR, which is just button pressing? I mean, the answer seems obvious. People are going to be good at fighting, are going to be good at a VR fighting game. But you fucking took the guy out. You knocked him out every time.
He didn't have any footwork. He was standing right in front of me.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, he was – I would, like, swing at him, and he would, like, inevitably just – he would fuck me up. But I'm obviously not.
I kept popping a jab and then stepping behind him and then left hooking him in the head and then right hooking him in the back of the head. I totally illegally punched him. And then I just beat the fuck out of him. I'm like, once I got him swarming, I'm like, what's he going to do? And I just teed off on him and then he fell down.
You were stepping behind him. That's something I didn't think
of. Yeah, immediately.
Just hitting him in the back of his poor
right mind. Away. I'm cheating. I'm like, fuck you. He's standing right in front of me. And I'm like, when I jabbed him, I could tell that he doesn't move that quick.
By the way, did you used to call him Russian?
He looks like a badass Russian dude.
Does.
Like a fucking guy who just came out of those baths, the banya.
Yes.
About to beat your ass. Russia produces some hard fucking people, man.
Dude, I know, man.
Some of the toughest guys that are currently fighting in the UFC are from Russia. There's a gang of them, or from the former Soviet Union, I should say. Dagestan has a lot of them.
Yeah, Russia does produce some fucking badasses, even in VR. So I'm just curious, like, I saw you get it for the first time now.
I got it when I was beating that dude up.
Yeah.
I was like, first of all, this is a workout.
Yeah.
I'm like breathing fast because I did three fights with him. And in each one of them, I'm actually throwing like punches and I'm moving and I'm standing around. I'm like, whoa, this is an actual workout. And one time he hit me. And I saw this big flash. You see like a spark when he hits you, just like it's like in real life if somebody punches you.
Oh, really?
Somebody punches you in real life, boom. You see like a flash.
Yeah.
Like especially if somebody really has power and they thud you. There's like you see a spark, like the lights just charged up on you. It was exactly what it was like when he hits you. So when he hit me, I had that same feeling that I've had when I've actually been hit. Like, oh, okay, don't let that happen again.
Right.
Like, figure out what the fuck you just did. Ramp it back up. You got a little complacent. Something happened. You zigged when you should have zagged. You didn't have your hands up. Whatever it was. So it's the same exact feeling that you get when you're sparring with somebody and they light you up.
Yeah.
Like, immediately you just start. Everything ramps way up. And that was that. Like, I felt. I was like, this is crazy.
You had an adrenal response.
Yes.
Like, when I was
Or I had at least a historical response. Like, I have a history with this feeling. So it was enough to trigger the actual real feeling of getting stung.
That's what it does. That's what's cool about it. I was at a VR convention. By the way, anyone in LA, they're doing VR LA this weekend, which is a badass convention of the, like, all the VR technologies there right now downtown if you want to get demos of this stuff. But I went there with my girlfriend, and she did, I can't remember which app it was, but I'm standing there watching her. By the way, like, a girl at a VR convention, it's the funniest thing. Like, photographers just surround her taking pictures because she's like,
where are you from?
Yeah, what are you doing here? But
why are you here?
She's like shooting stuff. And this guy that I'm with, a programmer, he's like, you know, she's getting really into it. And he's like, that's adrenaline. You're looking at adrenaline right now. She's having a biological response to this technology, which is what's super cool about it. Video games, you're going to get excited. Like Dark Souls, Quake, you're going to get into it, angry, frustrated. But VR, there's a few apps. There's one from Servios I didn't show you. There's a one called the Brookhaven Experiment, which I could show you after this. That's a zombie game where, like, zombies are coming or walking up to you. Your adrenal gland, it'll start releasing some of that shit, and your heart will start pounding, and the next thing you know, you lose track of the boundary of your play space, and you punch the fucking wall, which I've done a couple of times.
Believe me, I can see it happening. I was sold before you even put a game on. I was sold when you put that whale thing on. Right. There's this insane, what is it, BLU? It's amazing. You're in the ocean, and you're looking around, and it just... It obviously doesn't look real. It doesn't look like 100% real, but it might look like 85% real.
Right.
It looks 85% real. But that whale pulls up and stares at you, and you feel like the immense size of this thing is a reality in the space that you're in.
Yeah.
Like, it has weight to it. You're almost nervous to be around this whale. It's like, this is incredible.
That's it. That's it, man. It gives you a real sense of space, and also now you can see the future of gamers,
like the archery one, is big. The archery one is big.
Yeah, that's the lab. That's Valve's the lab. But yeah, Joe was like, "You did great too. I haven't gotten to that level yet. I could get to like 12, but I could never get as far as you got. It's really fucking hard."
How far did I get?
You got almost to the end. They finally,
really?
Yeah,
it's cunt.
Well, you got to like almost 15. I don't know if that's the end. I wanted.
You know what? And why I fucked up? I wasn't shooting enough of those balloons. I needed to get the health back to my door. It's a barbarian horde is attacking your castle. And you can shoot them as they're coming in. They're slow and stupid, and some of them have armor and some of them don't. But
Jamie, pull that up.
My arms got tired.
Yeah, man.
Dude, I was holding them. I was like, oh my God, my arms are fatigued. Because I'm basically like doing yoga. And I was thinking, this would be amazing for archery for real.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Well, it's the training aspect of it is incredible. And also you realize that in the future, which is now, gamers are going to be in great fucking shape. And gamers are going to be great at fighting. And gamers are going to be like athletes for real. Because like right now you're translating thought into your gamepad to control, or your keyboard to control games. But VR, you're going back to using your body again to like navigate through these spaces. And theoretically, especially, and I know they'll do it, like if you put some kind of wrist weights on while you're doing archery, so you're actually like, there's some weight there when you're shooting, or if you put like some kind of weights on when you're boxing, you're going to get a great fucking workout.
You could hurt yourself too, especially if you're boxing. You could hurt your shoulders. You got to be careful with anything where you're throwing punches with weights.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you got to build up to that. It's not, I would never universally say, don't do that because you'll get hurt. But it's one of those things where it has the, if you're not used to punching and then all of a sudden you start punching with weights,
right,
you could tweak something easy.
Right.
Especially if you're tired and you're like, push through it, pussy, and you throw in these punches with weights. You can kind of hyperextend things. You got to be careful. It's one of those things where a lot of guys use it. guys that are experienced and guys that are like really good boxers or really good strikers, they start using hand weights, like, but they don't go real heavy. Like most of them, no one's throwing like 50 and 60 pound punches.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's something that it can benefit you, but you already have to have good technique while you're doing it. Cause if you're putting your shoulder in a weird position or your neck in a weird, if you're doing that and you're throwing weight around, you could tweak something. You really should know what the fuck you're doing before you start throwing punches with weights in your hands.
Look, man, I got a few prepared questions for you because I'm always doing your podcast. You've got
okay. Can I just tell people how awesome the archery thing is?
Oh yeah, please. Sorry.
This fucking game is amazing. It's so addictive. I mean, right away, I was trying to ask for more honey. Like I got jacked. They jacked my door. I still hadn't figured out the fucking balloon thing to get the health of the door back.
Right.
And I hadn't figured out like when to time the shots. I was trying to take these crazy long range shots. And then I started waiting for them to get close. And once I waited for them to get close, I realized I'd timed out some areas. So if he was jumping through the air here, I timed out that he was going to be there in 2 seconds.
Right.
So I'd aim it there and fire, and he would jump like right into the arrow. And I did that a bunch of times. I started – that's like old Quake skills. I started developing like timing areas. Like there was areas on Quake maps where guys – you knew they were coming through, and that's where you'd wait with your railgun. And so like if you hear the guy's footsteps and he's going around the back end, you waited by that door with your crosshairs right on that door. And as soon as he opens it, bitch!
Right.
You do that all the time because it was like a pattern. So I started doing that with it, and then – it got so addictive, man. Yeah. My arms were shaking.
Yeah.
My arms were, I mean, how long was I doing it for?
You probably did it for like 20 minutes max.
It felt like 35 seconds.
And by the way, I could tell your arms were shaking. You could see your arms shaking in the thing that I was watching. Like you could see you gotten a little shaky. There is a better one that we couldn't get to work.
At the end, I was like shaking it into place and just hoping that the arrow would go where it needed to go.
There's a better one that I want to show you. Maybe after this, we have some time, called Hollow Point, which is a samurai archery game. So like when you shoot at a target, it actually shoots back at you, and you have to dodge it.
Oh shit!
So it adds archery mixed in with like having to dodge.
Oh my God.
Shit. It's so fun. That's the first time I got a real VR workout.
Doing this, though, led me to instantly recognize that if someone developed a virtual reality archery program, like where you could actually pull a bow back.
Yeah.
If you could actually – if they – like here's a problem with that. Unless you're shooting something, you don't want to be shooting something in a room, right?
Yeah.
But unless you're shooting something, the bow can get really fucked up by you just releasing it. They would have to make bows that were only designed to what you call dry fire.
Yes.
Because when you pull a bow back, you have to have an arrow in it. If you don't have an arrow in it and you just let it go, there's no weight at all on the string, it could destroy the bow. It'll just blow apart.
Yep.
And for sure, if you were doing... with a compound bow, if you're doing a game where you pulled a bunch of arrows back, like 30, 40, 50 arrows, it would definitely give out eventually.
Yeah, sure.
But if they can figure out how to get something that simulates a compound bow, simulates the exact pull, like even just have something with a real string, it just maybe the arrows... I mean, maybe they could do it like you could shoot it into like one of those things where guys hit golf. You ever seen those things where the guys drive golf balls into giant screens and then it plays out on the screen in a video game?
Yes. But it's not they. It's you.
Yeah.
You make this shit. This is the thing about VR, man. It's like you enter into it and your brain will start spitting out ideas like what you just said.
Immediately I thought that for archery that would be gigantic because I got better as that game went on. Even though I was tired, I was still jacking those little fuckers. Like, after a while, I got swarmed, and I kept forgetting to get health and shoot the balloons. But I was fucking those dudes up, you know? And I started doing it in, like, this pattern. And I was realizing, like, this has got to be good for your form.
Yeah.
I mean, you're constantly doing this, and you're aiming, and you're releasing these arrows. And you're pulling this trigger. It's fucking awesome, man.
It's an incredible training device for so many different things. Tomorrow, I'm going to do this demo. My friend Johnny Ross is making this thing. So it's a way to go into VR and make movies inside of VR, to make cartoons inside of VR. So you go into VR and you pick characters out. And so let's say, I don't know, you have an alien character, right? So to animate it, you actually go into the body of the alien, act out whatever the part of the script is that you want to act out, and then the VR films it, and then you can edit the whole thing together to make actual cartoons inside of virtual reality.
Whoa.
So, and this is like the design element of it. I forgot to show you Tilt Brush. I'll show you that app. The art element of VR is just insane.
God damn, dude.
I know. Because like right now, everything that we do when it comes to making music using computers, when it comes to editing video making computers, it's like we're still using a mouse, which is supposed to represent our finger, pressing, you know, gauges and dials inside the PC, but it's not an experience of actually making something with our hands. So when you add the ability to edit video, not the current way we do it, but by going into a virtual reality space, using your hands to like cut and slice and bring stuff together, brighten stuff up, at that point, there's this real, you go back to the days.
You think you'd have like pointers on your finger or something like that? Maybe just so like a simple glove?
Yeah, some kind of glove. Some kind of glove for sure.
Those hand controllers are amazing.
I know.
The ones that let you navigate through games and navigate through apps.
Perfect tracking.
Oh,
it's just insane.
It's really like, it's very accurate.
This is where Oculus fucked up because Oculus, and it's sad, man, because Oculus, they led the charge when it came to VR, and they released the goggles, and they wanted people to use gamepads with the goggles, whereas HTC Vive bundled together the controllers with the goggles, and people don't want to, you don't want to use a gamepad when you're in VR.
You want to use two hands.
Yeah, you want to use your hands. So
yeah, the gamepad would be terrible for something like an archery game. The archery game, what was cool about the archery game is I was holding my arms in a regular archery position. That was cool about the boxing thing. I was actually throwing punches. It feels weird to not hit something, right. But I kind of understood what he was doing, so I was throwing actual punches. Like, and I got tired. I was like, I'm fucking tired. Like, I did rounds today. Like, today was my kickboxing day.
Oh, yeah.
So I did, I already worked out today. So I'm like, bitch, what are you doing this again for?
Yeah, you know,
that's like my body's feeling that.
Yeah, right.
But that was after like a few rounds. I was like, this is a real workout. Like, you this guy's swinging at you. Dude, you actually have to move.
This is the thing, man. This is why, I mean, I hope someone does this, because if someone could design a martial arts training program.
Oh, yeah, for sure that could be done.
And when you consider that what you could do is pick which, like, UFC fighter you want to train with. So you have, like, the, like, you could actually, because I know I would do this. Like, I would pay, you like, right now, for example, there's a website where Werner Herzog is giving an acting class or a directing class. Like, the commercials were popping up, but you could, it's the first time Werner Herzog has ever taught any class. It's an online course, and it's a cool website where you can pick like different classes from these people. By the way, I'm not sponsored by them or anything. It just looks cool, right?
Right.
So imagine the thing that you, the boxing thing, right? Where you go into it, and it's like, train with fucking, you name it.
Right.
You know, any of them. Go through a, or any of the famous trainers.
Right.
They could just be there.
Yeah.
And you could like, download any of these training programs that you want, and it would work. You would become a good, or at least a relatively good fighter.
No, well, let me tell you something. It would definitely work. It would definitely work. Let me tell you something. I got to remember this because Werner Herzog apparently narrated some video about Pokemon Go, and I was narrated like, "This is the end of civilization." When the Pokemon Go phenomena ruined America, it was welcomed with open arms.
That's a great impression.
I've never done that before.
Dude.
That was my first ever Werner Herzog impression. God damn, that might be my best impression. He might be my best guy.
When you look at augmented reality, because I've thought about this. This is one, I've been watching it too, following it. And you get like, I think in parts of Israel, like in holy shrines and stuff, they're saying, don't look for Pokemon here, please. In the Holocaust Museum, they're saying, please don't look for Pokemon in the
Holocaust. Don't look for Pokemon in the Holocaust. I wonder if people, when I was in the Vatican, I wonder if the people were Pokemon, and they must be.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's gigantic, right?
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
This is the very beginning. It's like, when you realize that there's going to be a kind of augmented reality trespassing that's going to start happening where, you know, like, let's say that a revenge, like, you know how, like, there's some woman, I can't remember who it was going to have a Yelp for people, you know, where, like, you could, like, if you thought somebody was a dick, you could like leave a bad review. There was actually a thing girls were using called it was called a Lulu, and it was called Lulu. And so if you dated a dude who sucked, you could leave a bad Lulu for him. You could look up a guy on, I think it's called Lulu. I remember Cora was telling me that, like, she had to tell one of her friends, like, there's a bad Lulu about you. Because, like, but it's, like, weird. It's, like, they were, like, skirting the legalities of defamation. So you can't, like, say, like, this guy is a fucking asshole. You have to, like, leave emoticons for him or, like, thinks he's smart. And he's not. Like, shit like that.
Thinks he's smart and he's not.
But it's
that's awesome.
You can leave. So in augmented reality, if you are a fucking douchebag, there's going to be the potential for hovering above your house in augmented reality when you drive by people's houses.
Yelp review.
He's an asshole. Arrows pointing down. Now, also, we already have the addresses of sexual offenders. Like, they already have an app where you can see where fucking predators live in your neighborhood.
Yeah.
When that shifts to augmented reality and floating above the homes of sexual predators is like big neon fucking arrows. A fucking rapist lives here. A rapist lives here.
Oh my God.
Another potential of it is any home where someone has died. Theoretically, you could have ghosts floating.
Oh my God.
Anything on the record, holy, you know? Shit, dude. So that's what we're looking at is like, and again, it goes back to the idea of like right now, the way that like people, you know, guys, they like to wear fucking fancy jewelry, right? Dudes still will wear Rolexes, jewels, gems. They'll drive nice fucking cars. They'll do all of these things for a lot of different reasons. One of them being it displays their success in the world.
Peacocking.
Right? Peacocking. So peacocking in AR is going to be so fucking funny.
I like how you said AR, not VR.
Well, it's a difference. It's a big difference, you know? Like,
what's the difference?
Augmented reality incorporates the outside world. AR is the outside world. VR, you're solely in a new dimension. So AR, it's going to be glasses, and you're going to go to a bar. There's going to be an app called something like Fame Crown.
But it's ultimately all going to be VR, right?
No, I think you're going to. I think VR is going to go. So I would guess that cell phones are going to get better and better and better. The graphics in cell phones are going to get better, and it's going to become like right now. The problem with the HTC Vive and the Oculus is you're tethered to these cords, right? So it's a problem because you don't want to be tethered to anything when you're in VR. So a solution is the gear. And as cell phones get better, maybe you're going to be able to like just pop your cell phone into a headset.
Mm.
And no matter where you're at, somehow it'll use like some kind of GPS that doesn't exist yet to trace where you're at without having to put sensors on the wall. I don't know.
Right.
But AR, that Pokemon is AR. So we're going to start seeing that. People wearing glasses that project the AR into their eyes. And it's going to be just an amazing world, man.
But isn't it ultimately going to it's ultimately going to lead to something that's way more complicated. It's ultimately going to not just be augmented, but there's going to be the virtual option, the indistinguishable virtual option.
Yes.
There's going to be some Matrix-type situation where you're lying. I mean, even the way they did the Matrix where you're lying in a machine and there's like a tube in the back of your head. Like, how much different is that really than if they figure out some sort of a helmet that uses electromagnetic impulses, like some sort of a thing that we were talking about the other day where they're developing all these new technologies based on this idea. And Neil Brennan just went and got a bunch of depression treatments that were super successful by they're shooting magnets on his brain.
Yeah, I hear that works. I just had a friend who did ketamine treatment.
He did that too. Neil did that too.
It works.
Yeah, he said it worked, but he said after a while for him it got a little heavy. And then he was a real groggy for like a long time because there was a series of treatments you're supposed to do. He said the first couple were positive, and then after a while it got a little groggy.
Really?
Yeah, but he said that this treatment was by far the most successful, which I found really interesting.
Dude, it is. We are in, like, you know, I actually I just had this actually, it's weird. He's like the strangest combination of things. He's a gay porn star, but a really smart philosophical writer, Connor Habib. He's really fucking cool. Just to have had him on the podcast today, and we were talking. He was talking about how, you know, everyone was worried about 2012, right? 2012, the end of the world, the apocalypse. It didn't happen. A lot of people got embarrassed, you know. Terrence McKenna swore 2012, the I Ching points in this direction. But he made a really great point, which is that if you look at the world we're in right now, compared to the world before 2012, 2011, if you look at this world we're in right now, we're in a different dimension, man. We're in a dimension where everybody knows Hillary Clinton is a lying thief, where Donald Trump is running for president, where most of the population,
not just running, way past running.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
He's the Republican nominee.
So if you look at like the world we're in, everyone I guess has their own idea of how the apocalypse would look. You know, mushroom clouds. Maybe we're getting to that. I don't know. The feathered Mayan,
Quetzalcoatl
descending from the sky, whatever, but no.
I think that's Aztec.
The Aztec deity descending from the sky, but no. What Connor Habib was saying, which is pretty fucking smart, is like, we're now in the spirit world, man. You just saw what happened. You just jumped into another dimension at my house and boxed some Russian dude. Donald Trump is the Republican.
Might have been Italian.
He could have been Italian. I thought he was Russian too. Maybe Ukrainian. Donald Trump, presidential nominee. You know what I mean? Things are sliding off the fucking tracks right now.
It definitely is right now, but it hasn't been in the last 8 years. Like, the Obama thing is interesting, and I think we both share our disappointment in a lot of things that mainstream politicians do, right? But what I liked about Obama when he was in office is that he's intelligent and he's articulate, and that he seems to be a very measured guy with the way he speaks. You're not going to ever make everybody happy. Right. You're not. What disturbs me is what they did that wasn't what he said he was going to do when he was in office, especially in terms of like stuff like whistleblowers, like the Edward Snowden situation or WikiLeaks. Like, you can't deny that those information leaks, whether they're legal or illegal, they benefited human beings.
Right.
They benefited us. We needed to understand what we were dealing with in terms of the landscape of government spying on its citizens.
Right.
It's shaky stuff, and it's a reason why it's illegal. You know, it doesn't mean that there shouldn't be some ability to put surveillance on people that you think are about to do something fucked up.
Yeah,
but there's a big cry from that, big jump from that to watch everybody 24/7.
Right.
And if that's where it's going, because it kind of appears that's where it's going, hey, as long as you don't do anything wrong, Duncan, you don't have to worry.
Right.
It changes your fucking behavior. It's not healthy.
I don't think that's where it's going. I think that's where it went. And I think it went there a very long time ago. I think at this point, if you don't think you're being monitored by the government in some massive surveillance program, you're out of your fucking mind, man.
Yeah.
Data is being collected in ways that we can't possibly imagine. The nightmare of the paranoid is now a reality. I think that we are constantly being monitored. We are constantly being watched. I don't think that they have the processing power to sift through all the data just yet. But I think they have the data in repositories somewhere waiting for the ability to just filter through it. And this is where it gets terrifying because, again, like right now, we've got Obama. The drone dude, right? He's like a very charismatic, sweet guy, but I'm not too worried that Obama is going to like create some police state. He might be part of what's happening, but I'm not worried about him. And I'm honestly, even though Hillary Clinton is a lying warmonger who is apparently, you know, is taking a lot of money from other countries for her foundation in exchange for weapons and shit. She's done some pretty rancid.
Is that real?
They say that Saudi Arabia donated a lot of money to the Clinton Foundation, and right after that, an arms deal happened. Look it up. I looked it up, but shit, I don't know if it's like 100% real or not. I don't know if it's Trump propaganda.
It might have been that they were already doing an arms deal, and that was just to sweeten the pot. That's just as likely, right?
What why do you think Saudi Arabia? The question is, did Saudi Arabia donate money to the Clinton Foundation?
Yeah.
And if so,
why?
Why? And if they did, can Hillary Clinton do political maneuvering with Saudi Arabia and ignore the fact that they poured shit tons of money into her, into the coffers of her foundation? Do you want like some other country to have personally given money to your president? Do they have? Do you want your
not just a little bit of money, not like here's a $50 gift certificate.
Let's look it up. How much
to more? Chili's?
Yeah, it's not like a fucking Red Lobster gift card. How much money did Saudi Arabia? Oh, look, you know, it's so funny because when you just put in how much money did Saudi, it immediately pops up how much money did Saudi Arabia give to the Clinton Foundation?
Jesus Christ.
Because everyone's looking it up, but let's just see.
Oh, my God.
Fact checking. Donations to the Clinton Foundation, PolitiFact. Let's see what it says. Let's see. The public file, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Using Trump, Saudi Arabia, the Washington Post reported... God damn it. I've got to sit through this fucking...
Yeah, it's hard reading on the fly.
The Washington Post reported that Saudi Arabia gave about $10 million to build the library, some kind of archive. Oh, the Clinton Presidential Library.
They gave how much?
It's now possible to look up donation amounts on the Clinton Foundation website. Using Trump's Saudi Arabia example, Saudi Arabia shows up as having given between $10 million and $25 million since the foundation started when it began in 1997. The foundation's main goal was to build the Clinton Presidential Library, although it left open the option to engage in any and all other charitable, educational, and scientific activities that nonprofits are allowed to do. The foundation first revealed Saudi giving in December 2008. The total was in the $10 million to $25 million range then and hasn't changed since.
Wait a minute. How could they be off plus or minus by $15
million? Just $15
million. How could they plus somewhere around 10 to 25?
Who knows?
You know.
Who fucking knows, man?
Fucking knows.
Who fucking knows? I mean.
Who fucking knows, bro?
By the way, I think our stream died, but we went long
did
enough
it?
To be happy about. Yeah. But actually, it went for an hour, man. I don't know if it's dead. It's not saying it's dead here. But, yeah, I think it's still running. Maybe it just dropped out of my computer. But we've been here for an hour, man. So, look. Can I ask you one actual question?
Absolutely.
So, I was at Just Float in Pasadena. And I hear this shit all the time, man. And I'm sorry if this seems like I'm fucking kissing your ass or something.
Oh,
but
boy.
Here's the thing, man. Because I'm really curious about this. This guy, Jim Hefner, talks about like this whole float tank, this beautiful float facility. He said, you're the reason he built this fucking facility, right? And I run into a lot of different people like that who are like, man, the reason that I set out on this path of health is because of Rogan, right? Or a lot of people, like, you're having, like, this kind of massive influence on the lives of a lot of people. And I'm really curious about why you think that's happening and how you deal with the weird responsibility of being a little bit more than an entertainer and a little bit more than a comedian in a lot of people's lives.
Dude, that's heavy.
Yeah, man.
Woo! First of all, definitely never think about it that way because that'll paralyze you in fear and you'll never get anything done.
Right.
But
it's true.
What I try to do is I try to have podcasts with interesting people and have cool conversations with them. And I try to openly think and discuss life. And by life, I mean every aspect of it. What's going on in my head and what I've found that's helped me. And one of the cooler things about having a podcast is that you get to sit down with all sorts of super intelligent experts and examine the way they think and be stunned a lot of the time by the intellect of the people you're talking to. Like Dr. Rhonda Patrick is a perfect example. Every time I have her on the podcast, I'm like, God damn, she's so fucking smart and I'm so fucking dumb. Those are the two things I always think after every podcast with her.
Yeah.
Sam Harris is a similar one, you know, and there's been quite a few people that I've had on that are really fascinating, interesting people. Randall Carlson and Graham Hancock and, you know, the list can go on and on and on. So many really, really smart fucking people. And I'm always about trying to expand my view of things, trying to expand my thoughts, and trying to make my whole thing work as good as it can, physically, mentally. I want to be in that groovy, happy spot right. as much as possible. And along the way, I've learned some shit because I've made a lot of mistakes. But I'm also experienced enough in fuck-ups and then rebounding from fuck-ups and, like, figuring out how to stay motivated and keep your brain in check that when people talk about things like self-improvement type shit, it gets into such a douchey area, man. It's so possible to be douchey there. You got to be really careful.
Yes.
Because nobody wants to hear it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. One more set. Go out and fucking kick today's ass. You know, yeah. I'm a beast. I'm going beast mode, bro.
Yeah.
Like, it's so boring, right? When someone's giving you advice.
Yes.
What you need to do is get off your ass and realize today is a gift and tomorrow is uncertain.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Hashtag go for it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, sure. There's, I collect those because they're so cheesy. I have like 80 of them on my phone.
Chris D'Elia has a hilarious bit about those guys, by the way.
Oh, he did?
Hilarious. Really funny cool. bit about those kind of guys. But the point being is that, I am really lucky that I'm in this weird position that I get to talk to all these cool people and put it out there. And it's helped me, man. That podcast has helped me tremendously.
But
it's
man,
helped me shape my view of the world.
You have, as much as you don't want to be an inspirational teacher, you have, unfortunately, maybe if you consider it to be a cheesy thing, you have stepped into that role for a lot of people. It's not, it's funny. You're clearly brilliantly funny, but it's something more than that, man. And maybe you just ignore it. Maybe that's the secret. You just ignore it.
Just live your life, man. It's not important where all this stuff is coming from, whether it's coming from me or it's coming from you or it's coming from Joey or it's coming from whoever else is out there that is listening to this. It's going to start their own podcast. We are all discussing the bizarre nature of this fucking strange thing we call life. And we're doing it with humor, and we're doing it by analyzing things that are confusing to us, and we're doing it by talking about our own mortality and talking about our insecurities and how the desperate times of the past and exploring all the weird traps that our minds have led us into. And I think a lot of times people see someone, like whether it's like Jamie Foxx is one of those dudes that he's so successful, he does so many different things, you know, he can sing, he acts. I always assume that he's just one of those guys that just never fucked anything up, you know, like there's right. like, there's like a guy like that,
yes.
you know, the guy's just so smooth. He just coasted through that bitch.
Yeah.
And nothing.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a few guys like that, but the reality is for almost all of us, every single person that's listening, you and me, we're just an experiment. We're all trying to navigate this thing. Our parents were left with the shittiest fucking guidebook of how to live your life. They were left with a guidebook that was constructed by savages.
Right.
Like my grandparents and their grandparents, savages.
Right.
Savages. They were living in a time with no photographs. They were living in a time where you had no video, you had no idea what was going on
right.
in America,
right.
and you still got in a boat and you still came over here.
Right.
They were savages. They were crazy people. And they lived in a very primal way. We are sort of like bubbling out of that right now, all together, just a few generations later. We're bubbling out of that in some very strange and sort of fluid way. We're trying to find our own definition in this thing.
Right.
But it's unprecedented. It's unprecedented that in such a short amount of time, just a couple of generations, people have gone from the kind of people our great-grandparents were to us. It's very bizarre.
Yeah.
Very, very bizarre. And the staggering potential for the future that's going to make this gap, the gap between 1859 and 2016, the gap between 2016 and 2026 is probably right. going to be wider.
Yeah.
Probably way wider. And after today, man, after putting your gear on, This is the future. This is going to be really weird, man. It's going to be really, 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 really strange.
Well, Joe, thank you so much, man.
Are we done?
We're done. We got to go. We got a show to do, right?
7:19.
Also, I didn't get a chance to show you the VR porn yet, which you've got to.
Oh my goodness!
You have to glimpse. Man, I really appreciate it. I'm so glad to be friends with you. Thank
I'm
you
so glad to be friends with you, man. Show. You're awesome. It's one of the coolest things in my time here in Los Angeles is knowing both you and Ari from when you guys were working at the store, when you were just starting out and scratching and struggling, and to see you now kicking ass. It's awesome, man. It's beautiful. I love sitting here and looking at your logo on the wall.
Oh yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, and I listen to your podcast all the time, man. It's excellent.
Thank you, Joe.
I'm so happy for you.
Thanks, man. I love you, man.
I love you too, brother.
Thank you. Thanks for listening, everybody. A big thank you to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode. Go to squarespace.com and use offer code Duncan to get 10% off your first order. If you like this episode, please subscribe to us on iTunes. Go check out Feral Audio. There's a lot of other great podcasts there. And make sure that you have the greatest week that any human being has ever experienced in the current simulation that we call reality. I love you guys, and I'll see you soon.
My perfect day has sand, salt water, and friends. But my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can take me out of the moment. Now I'm all in with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi. Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150-milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. With Skyrizi, most people saw 90% clearer skin, and many were even 100% plaque-free at 4 months. Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin. And that means everything. Nothing is everything. Ask your doctor about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis. Visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
The new year brings new health goals and wealth goals. Protecting your identity is an important step. Your info is in endless places that could expose you to identity theft, leading to lost funds. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's restoration specialists will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Resolve to make identity, health, and wealth part of your New Year's goals with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.